Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of Talking with Political Science Students and Professors. This is, again, Thomas Gibbons, Editor-in-Chief of the Dominican Star. And today I have with me Erica Martinez. She is a political science major and a senior at Dominican University. And recently for her class, she did a project on Nevada and the West Coast in general heading into the 2020 presidential election. Erica, how are you doing today?
Hi, Thomas. I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Again, thanks for coming on and discussing the election with me. It's a very important topic in general every 4 years, but specifically this year, considering everything that surrounds it, COVID-19, you know, police reform, the economy, Obamacare. There's a lot of things that have gone into this election, as we have both seen. And to get started, I want to start off with what you did for your class. You said you did a project on Nevada and the West Coast.
Yes. First off, it's a pleasure to be here. And my project was for Professor Dolan's elections class. We were each assigned a specific region and an important state to keep close track on. So I was assigned to Nevada and the West Coast, which primarily focused on Washington State, Oregon, California, Alaska, and Hawaii, as well as Nevada. Of those states, I think we could say that Nevada was the most interesting to watch just because of it's slow counting, I guess. It was in the media for a while. I'm not sure if you saw, but they were very slow to count all of their votes. And overall, it was just an interesting state to follow because the polling was so close between President-elect Joe Biden and President Trump.
Right. And so my first question would be for you is, you know, we saw a huge state like Florida. They were able to announce the winner on election night. And now we go over to Nevada. It's a smaller state. But in terms of, you know, slow counting or, you know, accomplishing a task, you know, for it, you know, I always like to say, like, it is, you know, election day. You know, I would hope in the future that, you know, things are sorted out where it sort of doesn't become like an election week. You know, we're all sitting on the edge of our seats waiting for the winner to be announced on, you know, hopefully the Tuesday night of election day. So what would you say is your takeaway from, you know, a slow count in Nevada in terms of, you know, fast and efficient counts in, say, Florida?
You know, I think it's really hard to put that kind of pressure because, I mean, these are just workers. They're doing the best they can. Unfortunately, with the pandemic, there was just an increased amount of mail-in ballots, and each state had different dates of the last day that they could turn in their ballots. So I think for Florida, it was a shorter span of amount of days that they gave them. In Nevada, I want to say it was until the 10th of November that they could. The ballot had to be postmarked by November 3rd, but it could be received up until the 10th of November. So that also has a lot to do with it. Going into election day, I knew that we weren't going to get a result Tuesday night just because it would be impossible to have all of the ballots counted and it would be continuous counting for the rest of the week. But I think that overall, all of the states did a very good job. Nevada was slow, but I think Georgia's still in a toss-up with its congressional elections, too. So, I mean, the best we can do is just wait.
Speaking of mail-in ballots, how did that, considering that mail-in ballots were probably used the most, I'd say, in this election, there was a very high count of those. How did that factor into your project and how you overall you watched the election, knowing that, you know, the early results were probably from the ballots counted at the polling places, but that mail-in ballots would soon follow.
Yeah, it was interesting to see. I didn't notice that much of a change in the West Coast states. In Nevada, it was too soon to tell which way the state was going to go. I know with Texas, when you first started watching it was blue. And that to me was very strange, seeing Texas go blue. But that was because of, I don't know if they started either with the mail-in ballots or the actual day of count votes. But then later on, it went to red. So it was a little confusing to see it at first. You saw states that were different colors, and then they went back to their normal colors, I guess. And I think that for Nevada, the mail-in ballots were a big factor in for President-elect Joe Biden to win that state, just because of the massive amount of mail-in ballots that were being counted.
And I think that was going to the mail-in ballots were, I think, always going to lean to Joe Biden's side. I thought it was up for, you know, to Trump supporters to show up to the polls on election day, you know, their strong suit in 2016 that eventually won in the election. Where in 2020, we saw the same message from President Trump. And then we saw a message from Vice President Biden on, you know, voting by mail because of the pandemic. You know, if you don't want to go outside your house, if you don't want to be waiting in lines, or you don't want to be in, you know, possibly a crowded polling place, that mail-in ballots is the way to go.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, that was Biden's entire campaign was on mostly on that the pandemic is a serious thing and that we must take the proper precautions. And that's why mail-in ballots were the best solution for those who voted for Biden. And on the other hand, Trump tried to make it seem that it was possible to lead for more fraud, which is possible, yes, but do we have the proof? We're still searching for that. So it is hard to calculate, I guess.
With your project, like you said, you were, you know, told to watch these states closely, and I'm sure you had some sort of predictions here or there. In terms of, you know, voter fraud, was that a thought going into the project, knowing that, you know, Trump has, you know, said multiple times, you know, that there is the worry of this? Did you see it going into the election as possibly a big problem or something that could delay the results?
When I began my project, I didn't worry too much about it, just because, I mean, no one really put too much emphasis on it besides President Trump and his campaign. Once the votes began to be counted and there were more accusations of voter fraud, I guess in the state of Nevada, there were about, I want to say, 50 to 60 ballots that were technically fraud, but it was due to military families. They had been living in California and then moved to Nevada and voted in Nevada when they should have voted in California. But that was just like a residential mix-up. And other than that, I haven't seen any other sources of fraud. And like I said, there might be fraud, but we just need to see the proof. And if we don't have that proof, like those families that voted across state lines, then there's nothing to base it on.
I spoke with another political science major earlier. You may know him, Tony Sandifer. And he said something that was interesting that I completely agreed with. You know, he said that every election, there is fraud votes. And I think like what you just said is an example, like, you know, maybe it wasn't intentional, you know, you voted somewhere that you weren't supposed to. So there could be a chance of, you know, a double count. You know, I've seen examples like that where you're supposed to, you know, you're not voting where you're supposed to vote. So there could be a mix up there. But recently, I just want to get your opinion on, you know, the reports in the past few days from, you know, the Trump campaign, you know, calling out, say, the Dominion, you know, voting server, you know, that counts the ballots, or Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani talking about that he has, you know, millions of votes to, you know, overturn potential states. In your research, in your, you know, in your studying through your elections class, do you think there's any sign that there could be a major overturn of votes? And do you believe that there is massive fraud and not just, you know, a little bit of it?
You know, I have faith in the system. I mean, we've been having elections for a very, very long time, and to think that they could overturn millions of votes, I think that's very hard to prove. Of course, they will find, like we said before, there might be some ballots that were fraud, you know, double voting across state lines, the military families, or just small little mix-ups that happen. Obviously, that's going to happen because we're human. We're prone to human error. So not every election is going to be perfect. But to have the hopes to overturn millions of ballots, I'm very skeptical on that. And I don't think that it will happen. I read recently today that President Trump is withdrawing some of his lawsuits that he has, I think, in the state of Pennsylvania about the votes. So maybe, you know, maybe he will admit defeat. I'm not sure, but that's just one state. I know he has a lot of lawsuits in lots of states, and he has demanded recounts, and he wants the courts to settle this, but I think it's an exaggeration, and to be that hopeful to overturn millions of votes is too much.
Obviously, Trump's team and Trump himself are very confident that it could get overturned. There is a lot of his supporters out there, especially like we saw this weekend in D.C., with their, you know, peaceful protest of trying to, you know, just gain more attention, seeing, you know, hoping that, or, you know, trying to bring up the fact that there is voter fraud. But, you know, I'm in the same boat, I'd say, as you. I'm still waiting on more, you know, substantial evidence. You know, there has been in the past few days, like Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, you know, came on TV and, you know, showed proof of, you know, signed affidavits of people, you know, stating that they have seen some sort of fraud. But I also, like you did, I did see that there were some lawsuits that were lost or withdrawn. So I think we're still playing the waiting game here.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I know most states are at 99% already with their votes counted, but like I said, some states are still accepting mail-in ballots. The latest that I saw was California. You could turn in a ballot and, all the way until November 23rd. I mean, it had to be postmarked by the 3rd, but it could be received until the 23rd of November. And it's only the 16th, so, but to say that in California, you know, all the mail-in ballots are going to lean the state in one way or the other, that's ridiculous. So, like I said, there could still be ballots found that could be fraud, but to overturn the election it's too much.
I want to circle back to the states that you focused on again. And California is an interesting one to me because, you know, I saw, and I wonder if you saw, that, you know, there was a lot of support out in California, whether it was, you know, Beverly Hills or in some of the cities, of, you know, Trump car parades or, you know, Trump people, you know, marching with flags in the streets or on sidewalks. And I still thought it was a long shot for Trump to flip California, just knowing the history of the Democratic state that it is. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on seeing, you know, some, you know, that kind of a conservative movement in a very Democratic state?
Well, like I had mentioned before, Texas, if you were watching early on, election night, it was blue, and that's interesting to see. But then it turned red at the end. So with California, it's also the same. I think that in every state, you're gonna have an even amount of red counties versus blue counties, and it seems that in California, those red counties wanted to state their support a little bit more than what we've usually seen. If you check on their data for their votes, they have quite a few counties that voted for Trump, with the majority for Trump. But then it's always the rural versus the urban. So the rural areas usually tend to be Republican, and the urban cities tend to be Democrat. So obviously, where it's more populated, they're going to outweigh the rural areas. So the big cities in California, like Los Angeles and I think San Francisco too, they always go Democrat, but it's because of their heavily populated areas. The same could be said in Nevada. If you look at their counties, the entire state is red except for two counties, which is where Reno and Las Vegas is. And those are the mostly populated areas. Nebraska also has desert areas, so even if it's rural, then nobody's gonna be voting in the desert. And it all depends on the population as well, and from where you're counting the votes first.
Right, and I think we see that as a prime example here in Illinois.
Yes.
Cook County, DuPage County, and surrounding counties within the city is going to always lean Democratic, given the urban population. But then you go towards central Illinois and especially southern Illinois, it's always going to be red just because of the rural, and that's how they traditionally vote.
Yes. Yeah. I know my professor has said this before, but I mean, voting can be cyclical. There was a time when Illinois voted for Republican, and right now it's voting for Democrat, but we can see that it's sort of starting to outweigh each other. The Democratic Party in Illinois is losing a little bit of its power, and the Republican Party is gaining some of its power. So, I mean, will it be the next election that Illinois turns red? Probably not, but it might happen down the road. Just like it did in the past. So it all just depends on if the people are tired of their politicians who aren't doing anything, they'll vote for the other party. And once they get tired of that party, they'll go back to the other party. So it's cyclical.
Right. I mean, states can flip-flop. I mean, for the longest time, Illinois was Republican. And it's recently become a heavy Democratic state. But I mean, yeah, it could flip-flop. I mean, I know, like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, I know it's been referred to as the blue wall. Like those three are traditionally Democrat, but if a Republican were to flip one or two, it could be a huge swing in the election, just like we saw in 2016 with President Trump when he won Wisconsin and Michigan. And that was, one of the shockers of the night, but ultimately, helped propel him to victory.
Yeah, and I mean, even in this election, we saw the close race between Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Pennsylvania was projected to be for President Trump, and then once all the mail-in ballots came in, it favored Joe Biden. So those were really neck and neck, and I think they're maybe a percentage, less than a percentage apart, and that's why President Trump wanted to file all of his lawsuits and do recounts. But I mean, the votes are counted, so those are the results that we got.
I think this is I think an opportunity here for anyone, for the listeners to hear this. What is it like? What is the day in the life like in a elections class right now? After this election, considering the mail-in ballots, considering all of it, because it's been truly a unique election.
Well, it's been interesting. We definitely have some great discussions, and we try to really tease out every section, every part of it. Talking about voting demographics is so fascinating to see how many people go out to the polls, and whether it's a large group of Hispanics, African Americans, whether they're educated, not educated, from rural or urban areas. We mostly just try to tease all of that out, really look at it from an analysis based outlook, and you know, what are the next steps? Once we heard that President-elect Joe Biden had won, we started discussing, like, well, what are his first 100 days going to be like? You know, if we could give Joe Biden some advice on his first day in office, what would that be? And just discussing what the future is going to be like.
Yeah, that, especially that part about giving him advice first in office, that's interesting. That definitely would spark up conversation and just different kind of avenues of what personally, you know, you or people in the class think, what, you know, what would be a successful day? You know, is it reaffirming, you know, reaffirmation to your voters? Is it, you know, already signing in a piece of legislation? You know, something like that to, again, make it a successful day. It's like, you know, if first day on the job, you want to make a good impression.
Right, exactly. And in my class, we voiced a lot of our opinions towards COVID-19 and perhaps advising Joe Biden to put a mask mandate across all the states. A lot of people had an emphasis on trying to compromise and trying to work with Congress to actually pass more legislation. I think that is a critical aspect right now. The president really needs to work with Congress so that we can get more stuff done. It's the only way that we'll be able to pass a new stimulus. It's the only way that we'll be able to pass legislation for anything, you know, healthcare, the environment, because Joe Biden is very big on the environment, or even, you know, lowering the national debt. That's a big one for me. I think that the national debt is crushing us right now, and we really need to work together to lower it.
Days leading up to the election, I liked to kind of predict, you know, the electoral map. You know, I was just, you know, playing around with that and seeing, well, if, you know, what if Biden or Trump lost Ohio, right? How can they still win? What if, you know, Trump was able to take Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida? Is that it for Joe Biden? Would he have to, you know, concede at that point? Mm-hmm. Did you guys, you know, do anything like that? Or how was it discussed amongst the class in terms of predictions and discussions on election night for that being?
Yeah, we did. Like I said, we divided up all the states between people and the regions for specific groups. I don't remember the exact count, but I think that in our predicted electoral map, we had Joe Biden with a landslide win of like over 300 electoral votes, and President Trump with barely any. So we definitely have to go back and see where we over-predicted, where we were over-hopeful, I guess, for Joe Biden, because it was a lot closer, you know. There was a scenario where it could have tied, and, you know, it would have gone to, I think, Congress, but thankfully it didn't get that deep.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, when you're, you know, going back to the results, like you said, you know, breaking down into voter turnout. And I did any of the, obviously this was the most turnout in any election. When you broke it down into races and gender and all the other different categories that voters are broken into, were any of them surprising to you?
I don't think so. I think what we tried to mostly see is which states had higher different races coming out to vote and try to compare them. I mean, we gave the example that Hispanics living in Arizona think very differently than Hispanics living in Florida. So it's hard to campaign in these two states and try to get, just to clump all Hispanics under the Hispanic vote. They had the different Hispanics come from different backgrounds, whether it's Mexican, Cuban, Venezuelan. So it's we mostly just try to see how we could tease that out, how we could even create subcategories between each of the groups. But we know that a lot of it did ride on minority groups coming out to vote, with the young vote also very important, and just trying to measure it all out.
Just to look over the election as a whole, what were you surprised by the most on election night?
I don't think I was, I think I was surprised. It wasn't on election night, but once I looked over the voting polling numbers and everything, I was surprised to see that Joe Biden didn't. He had a large young vote, but it wasn't as big as I thought. I think it was somewhere in the 60s. And I thought that he would have gotten over 70% of the young vote, and it turned out it wasn't as high.
Do you think a different Democratic candidate, say like Bernie Sanders, would have gotten a bigger turnout among young voters, considering he has stated in the past a raised minimum wage, free college, a lot of a lot of free things, I'd say is a good way to sum it up. Do you think that a different candidate from the Democratic Party would have gotten a bigger turnout among young adults?
Yeah, I would say so. Just because he has that appeal to the young vote, and we've seen even from the 2016 elections, he had that big following of young people, and then with his grouping of AOC and other progressive Democrats that are, trying to really help young people to get ahead so that they're not crushed by student loans and all this other overwhelming debt. He seemed to be a voice for them, and I think that he would have gotten a higher percentage of the vote than what Joe Biden got.
Shifting to COVID-19, that's obviously was a big part of the election. I asked another political science major student this question as well. So you have obviously you've seen Biden and Harris have their transition team to the presidency, and they also have like their own, you could say, COVID task force or COVID team on, how they're going to handle it. And then you have your, you still have the COVID task force with Vice President Pence and his team. Do you think that Biden forming a team and then they have their message, and then you still have the president-elect and the vice president-elect sending out their message where, everyone is to be looking because everyone looks up to the president, obviously, for guidance, as he is the leader of the free world? Do you think that there is a problem or, an overwhelming issue with these conflicting messages coming from the president-elect and the current administration?
Yes, I would say so, because people don't know who to listen to, who has the upper hand. I mean, technically, President Trump and Vice President Pence, they're still in power until the day that Joe Biden enters the White House. And if they're sending different messages on what to do and how to be safe and how to handle the pandemic, obviously people either they're not going to know what to do and they're going to try to pick whichever side is best for them, or they're just going to ignore it overall. And whatever they choose is it's not going to, I don't know if it's actually going to help us or not. as we see the numbers are rising and people, physicians and doctors have always said, you know, don't have big gatherings, especially for the holiday season. And I think that's just disappointing to people. And overall, I think they're just getting tired too. I know that they've lowered the days of quarantine. It used to be 14 days and now it's 10 days because people, they just can't handle it anymore. They get tired of being, you know, just placed on house arrest all day long and they just want it to be over with, but there's nothing really to solve it yet.
Absolutely. To conclude our conversation, I want to circle back to something you said earlier about you and your classmates in class talked about. You know, what advice would you give President-elect Biden on his first day in office? Do you remember what you said? Because I think that's an interesting tidbit.
Yeah, mostly I said to try to work with Congress, try to really unite the country, because in these last 4 years, we've seen a lot of division. And I mean, that's what Joe Biden ran his campaign on. He is the soul. He's trying to restore the soul of America, to fight for the soul of America. So if that's what he ran on, that should be his message. How is he going to unite the people? He said that he doesn't see blue states or red states. He just sees the United States. And I think that he should really try to emphasize that, just to bring the country together.
Right. I think unity is a big thing, considering that, you know, the violence in the streets and the rioting and looting, it truly doesn't have a place in America, and we all hate to see it. And I think that is a big thing that he's going to have to tackle come January 20th. So, Erica, thank you again for joining. I had a good conversation, and I hope that this finds potential listeners well. I think we hit on a lot of good things, from your project to COVID, to, you know, what you looked at, and then talking a little bit about, you know, we always just look at the popular vote or, you know, the electoral numbers, but when you break it down into counties or voter turnout among a certain gender, race of people, it really does, it adds to Election Day, and it really adds to the demographic and, you know, who's voting for who in this country.
Yeah, I mean, this was really fun. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Everyone, thanks for listening.